And welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, August 14th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. A former FBI attorney pleading guilty to falsifying a document to justify surveillance of a former Trump campaign advisor as part of the 2016 investigation into Russian interference in the election. The first criminal case brought by U.S. Attorney John Durham, who is leading the investigation into the origins of the Russia investigation. We'll have the latest in a moment. President Trump now says he will approve billions of dollars in funding for the Postal Service as part of a coronavirus relief package if Democrats make concessions on certain White House priorities. The president recently said he does not want to give the Postal Service the extra money because it could be used to help deliver mail-in ballots, which he says are subject to widespread fraud. And former President Barack Obama now joining this debate, accusing President Trump of trying to actively kneecap the Postal Service to discourage voting during the coronavirus pandemic. And a United Nations Security Council vote on a U.S. proposal to extend the arms embargo against Iran. And we start with the expected guilty plea in connection with U.S. Attorney John Durham's investigation into the origins of the FBI's investigation of ties between Russia and the 2016 Donald Trump presidential campaign. In a moment, we'll get the latest from a Washington Post reporter. But first, here is President Trump, who brought it up as the first item in his Friday afternoon news conference at the White House.
So we have some very interesting news. Kevin Kleinsmith, a corrupt FBI attorney who falsified FISA warrants in James Comey's very corrupt FBI, is expected to plead guilty. You probably heard that. It just came out. So that's just the beginning, I would imagine, because what happened should never happen again. So he is pleading guilty. Terrible thing. Terrible thing. Fact is, they spied on my campaign and they got caught. And you'll be hearing more.
With more on this story, we're joined on the phone by Matt Zapatosky, national security reporter for The Washington Post. Help us understand what's happening today. Who is pleading guilty to what and why?
Yeah, so it's a guy named Kevin Kleinsmith, who used to be an FBI lawyer, essentially, who was involved in some high-profile cases notable to this. To what we're talking about today is he was involved in the FBI's Russia investigation. And it's a little complicated, but the FBI was wanting to surveil this former Trump campaign advisor, a guy named Carter Page. To do that, they have to apply to a court called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and reveal sort of everything they know about Page and why they think he might be an agent of a foreign power. They knew that Page had some type of relationship with the CIA because the CIA had told them as much, and that would kind of undercut against the notion of him being an agent of a foreign power. When he's interacting with foreigners, at least in some respect, he's telling the CIA about that. So Kleinsmith, this guy, this FBI lawyer who's involved in preparing an application to surveil Carter Page, is asked, hey, get to the bottom of Carter Page and the CIA. The CIA affirms to Kleinsmith, yes, we have or had a relationship with him. Kleinsmith takes that note that the CIA sends him, forwards it to the person actually doing the application, but he adds, not a source, in the text of that email, sort of implying Carter Page did not actually have a relationship with the CIA. So the court that's considering this application to surveil Carter Page never learns that Carter Page had a relationship with the CIA, approves the warrant to surveil him, and that's obviously problematic, right? You would want the court to know about that, and because of Kleinsmith's actions, they weren't told.
How big of a deal is this criminally? What's the potential penalty?
Yeah, this is just like a false statements case. I hate to speculate on penalties. One, he hasn't pleaded guilty yet, so he does have to go through with it, though we certainly expect him to. Two, there's these things called statutory maximum penalties, and in this case, it's a false statement, so it would be like 5 years, but that could be a gross exaggeration even of what he would get. In most of these false statements cases, you're talking about months in jail, if any time at all. The court kind of considers all these factors, his criminal history, if there is any other details about the case. So this isn't a it's a very serious thing to deceive the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. But in terms of the penalty he could get generally in these false statements cases, it's not that severe. It's also important to note this is kind of the first prosecution or first criminal case brought by John Durham, who Attorney General Barr tapped to investigate the Russia investigation. That is kind of what makes this so notable. But Republicans, I think, have been hoping for a lot more than one FBI lawyer charged with false statements. They want to see high-level FBI officials charged, maybe even political officials charged. That certainly isn't what happened today, but that's not to say this isn't significant in its own right.
The president said again today, they spied on my campaign and got caught. So looking at what happened today, does it shed any light on that accusation one way or another?
It doesn't quite support that. That's an overstatement of what happened today. You know, the president was also saying today, that's just the beginning, you know, I would imagine, because what happened should never happen again. He said they spied on his campaign. We're talking about surveillance of a former campaign official, surveillance which certainly was controversial, and this plea, expected plea, speaks to that. But this broad allegation of the FBI or the CIA institutionally spying on Trump's campaign was not really supported today. This was kind of a mission that was passed along to the FISA court that was helped the FBI surveil a former campaign official, but it doesn't sort of prove this allegation of the FBI trying to get political information from inside of President Trump's campaign.
We're talking with Matt Zapotosky of The Washington Post. As you've been watching the Durham investigation, is there any indication that there are more cases coming down the pike?
It's so tough to track. In our reporting, Durham has been asking about a wide range of topics. One thing he has been very acutely focused on is these applications to surveil Carter Page, which even outside of Kevin Kleinsmith have had a lot of problems. But Kevin Kleinsmith was the only person who we sort of knew about an obvious criminal allegation. You know, the inspector general, actually, before Durham was up and running, found a lot of this stuff. He referred his findings to Durham about Kleinsmith. So we knew a lot of what had happened today. We didn't know that that Mr. Kleinsmith was going to plead guilty, but we knew about the allegations against him. Aside from that, it's difficult to assess if there are any criminal allegations. Certainly, we've heard of Durham asking witnesses about things that he doesn't feel were quite right in the Russia probe, these applications to surveil Carter Page, why the Bureau kept going, particularly on Carter Page, when they were getting information that maybe he wasn't actually an agent of a foreign power. But proving a crime out of that, it's just been difficult for us to determine that. Certainly that is what Republicans hoped. That is what President Trump said today. And certainly this does not mean Durham's case is over. The Attorney General, in previewing this yesterday, said, look, there's going to be a development tomorrow. It's not going to be earth-shattering. And there will be significant developments before the election. So the Justice Department is intimating there are things to come. We'll see if those things are criminal or rather just John Durham issuing a report that is something short of criminal.
Matt Zapotosky, national security reporter with The Washington Post. Find his work at WashingtonPost.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
President Trump at his news conference today at the White House also asked about his younger brother, Robert Trump, said to be in the hospital and very ill.
I wanted to ask you, what ails your brother, Robert, and how's he doing?
Yeah, I have a wonderful brother. We've had a great relationship for a long time, from day one. It's a long time ago. And he's in the hospital right now, and hopefully he'll be all right. But he's having a hard time.
After the news conference, President Trump visited his brother at the hospital in New York before heading to Bedminster, New Jersey, and his golf club there for the weekend. It was Robert Trump who filed a lawsuit last month seeking to block publication of their niece Mary Trump's tell-all book, at the time saying that he and the entire family were so proud of my wonderful brother, the president. Robert Trump is 71 years old, 3 years younger than President Trump. Now to the latest on emergency funding for the Postal Service and the mail-in election ballot issue. It's been part of the on-again, off-again negotiations between the White House and congressional Democrats over another coronavirus economic relief package. More questions today to the president.
Mr. President, on the issue of more money for the U.S. Postal Service and mail-in balloting.
Yeah.
If the Democrats were to give you some of what you want, which you articulated in a series of tweets in the last hour, would you be willing to accept the $25 billion for the Postal Service, including the $3.5 billion to
handle
mail-in
voting? Sure, they give us what we want.
And it's not what I want, it's what the American people want. So in addition to, and I think, John, as part of your answer, I can read this, but in addition to the executive orders that we signed, which are going to be doing terrific things in terms of payroll tax cut, which is a lot of money coming to a lot of people very quickly. I've directed the Secretary of the Treasury to get ready and send direct payments, $3,400, for a family of four to all Americans. Democrats are holding this up. I am ready to have the UST and SBA send additional PPP payments to small businesses that have been hurt by the China virus. Democrats are holding this up. So we're talking about those are two things directly involved and really victim of the China virus. We're ready to send. Democrats are holding up. I'm ready to send rental assistance payments to hardworking Americans that have been hurt by the China virus. All of these things are in a list. Democrats are holding this up. I'm ready to send $105 billion to the states to help open schools safely with additional PPE. And Democrats are holding this up. So that's $105 billion to the states to help open schools safely with additional PPE. Democrats are holding that up, right? And I'm ready to send more money to states and local governments to save jobs of our great police, our firefighters, our first responders and teachers. It's all ready to go. Democrats are holding it up. So they're holding, John, all of that up.
So if they were to give you that, you would sign off on the money for the Postal Service?
Yeah, but they're not giving it to me. They're giving it to the American people. I mean, giving it
to you agree to that?
Yeah, I would certainly do that, sure. I would do that.
President Trump in the White House briefing room. Democrats have pushed for $25 billion for Postal Service funding. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that was the amount recommended by the agency's Board of Governors. And another $3.5 billion in supplemental funding to be used for election resources amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Speaker Pelosi and the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer issued a statement today that reads, "The president's comments today affirm that no patriotic tradition is immune from his abuses of power. The president made plain that he will manipulate the operations of the post office to deny eligible voters the ballot in pursuit of his own reelection. The president's own words confirm he needs to cheat to win." Earlier in the day, the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said Republicans do not support withholding funding from the Postal Service, and they do also urge voters to cast ballots by mail. Congressman McCarthy was on CNBC.
At least from appearances on the outside, it appears as if politics are being played with this COVID bill in different ways, but also specifically with this postal issue, because it does potentially limit people from being able to vote. And we can debate whether, you know, the distinction between a mail-in vote and an absentee vote. And I think that's a worthy debate. Yeah. But I don't know about withholding money from the Postal Service, which could actually have a meaningful impact on the election.
You're not hearing anything on our side about withholding money. The president's making a case about the mail-in, but the president did not put a veto threat in it. I think when you're talking about negotiations and others, the Postal Service will have the funding that it needs. And we'll make sure of that. We want to make sure that we have an accurate election. I think any Republican that gets their ballot in the mail should vote that and make sure that their vote is counted. Trace it. Make sure that that is the person voting. But that's an importance that we have, and we'll make sure that funding is there.
House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy on CNBC. Former President Barack Obama also weighing in on this issue, tweeting, "Everyone depends on the USPS. Seniors for their Social Security, veterans for their prescriptions, small businesses trying to keep the doors open. They can't be collateral damage for an administration more concerned with suppressing the vote than suppressing a virus." And the former president elaborated on a podcast with his former campaign manager, David Plouffe.
If you ask me, the single thing that I am most concerned about between now and November, it is that we do everything humanly possible to ensure that everybody who wants a change in administration actually registers that change at the ballot box, whether that is in person or by mail-in voting. Now, what we've seen in a way that is unique to modern political history is a president who's explicit in trying to discourage people from voting, right? I mean, usually the Republican Party for quite some time has actively tried to discourage people's votes from counting in all kinds of ways, whether it's voter ID laws or, you know, blatant gerrymandering, making it difficult for people in certain precincts to find their polling places, right? All that stuff is contrary to American democracy, but I think the Republicans' view has been it's all fair game as long as it helps us gain power. What we've never seen before is a president say, I'm going to try to actively kneecap the Postal Service to encourage voting, and I will be explicit about the reason I'm doing it.
Yeah,
that's sort of unheard of.
Former President Barack Obama on David Plouffe's podcast. Washington Post reports, anticipating an avalanche of absentee ballots, the U.S. Postal Service recently sent detailed letters to 46 states and Washington, D.C., warning that it cannot guarantee all ballots cast by mail for the November election will arrive in time to be counted, adding another layer of uncertainty ahead of the high-stakes presidential contest. The Washington Post goes on, the letters sketch a grim possibility for the tens of millions of Americans eligible for a mail-in ballot this fall. Even if people follow all of their state's election rules, the pace of the Postal Service delivery may disqualify their votes. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 34, NASDAQ down 23, S&P down a fraction. Back in a minute with more Washington Today. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. A Government Accountability Office report says two top Homeland Security Department officials were invalidly appointed to their positions, Acting Secretary Chad Wolf and Acting Deputy Secretary Ken Cuccinelli. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer has now called on the two to resign. President Trump preemptively attacking Washington Post journalist Bob Woodward's upcoming book about the president. It's titled Rage. President Trump tweeting the Bob Woodward book will be a fake, as always, just as many of the others have been. But believe it or not, lately I've been getting lots of great books. Rage will be released September 15th. And a new poll finds half of the country now saying they know someone who has contracted coronavirus. That's up from 41% last month. It's a poll by the Societal Experts Action Network. And now to campaign 2020, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris signing the official paperwork today to put the ticket on the ballot in all 50 states. They were in Wilmington, Delaware.
We're going to make this official, official. We're signing our request to get on the ballot in each of the states. I'm starting off by signing Delaware, and the senator's going to sign California, and then you guys leave me down the real work and get all the states and territories. So thank you. Ready, get set, go.
I'm ready. Go.
Make you sound a lot more in Delaware.
Senator Harris, what do you make of President Trump and Republicans' attacks on you since you became the running mate for Mr. Biden?
I'm signing this because I'm in this race to win, and with that guy right there, and we're going to get it done.
Have you been tested for coronavirus?
Come on, guys.
Senator?
Thank you,
Senator,
guys.
Have you been tested
come on, you
for
guys.
Coronavirus?
Come on, let's go. Come on, thank you. Come on, guys. Thank you.
Photo opportunity today with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in Delaware, not taking reporters' questions. The Biden-Harris campaign, though, released a new ad today focusing on the coronavirus and another call for a nationwide mask mandate.
To fix the economy, we have to get control over the virus.
I'm releasing a plan to save lives in the months ahead. We need to increase federal support for testing, doubling the number of drive-through testing sites. We absolutely need a clear message from the very top of our federal government that everyone needs to wear a mask in public. Every single frontline worker should have the personal protective equipment that they need to be safe. We need to support schools and childcare programs so parents, if and when they can return to work, are confident that their children will be safe and cared for. And finally, we need to protect the populations most at risk, our seniors, vulnerable populations with pre-existing conditions. We need real plans, real guidelines, with uniform nationwide standards. It's a simple proposition, folks. We're all in this together. We gotta fight this together. We'll emerge from this stronger because we did it together. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
That ad released today. The coronavirus has infected now over 5.2 million Americans, killed over 167,000. The Democratic National Convention starts Monday, August 17th. The Republican National Convention is the week after, starting August 24th, mostly online. You can listen to all the speeches in their entirety right here on the C-SPAN networks, C-SPAN Radio, C-SPAN.org, and, of course, C-SPAN Television. And a reminder that C-SPAN has been documenting the appearances of political figures since 1987 in our free searchable video library. Over 260,000 hours. Watch, clip, and share. www.c-span.org. One of our guests on Friday morning's Washington Journal on C-SPAN, Patrice Onwuka, senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum, and she was asked about Democratic vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris.
When it comes to the Senate and California state record of Kamala Harris, what issues concern you the most about her record?
Workers' rights, number one, and unfortunately, her criminal justice record. I think, number one, everyone has looked at, from the criminal justice side, the fact that she has promoted being a top cop. Well, that's great. Law and order is important. We want to ensure that if you are breaking the law, that you are, that you're held accountable. The question is, when you look at her record, whether she has, in certain cases, withheld important evidence against people being prosecuted, whether she's prosecuting individuals for crimes that they didn't even commit. I mean, prosecuting parents for truancy. I get she wants to keep kids in school, but are you really for the black and brown people if the people that are going to be targeted by that policy are black and brown people? From a worker standpoint, she supported California's AB5 law, which squarely hits at independent contractors, eliminating thousands, potentially millions, if this is made federal policy, independent contractors, people like some of the guests that you were talking about, one of your previous guests mentioned, landscapers, people who have their own small businesses, manicurists, translators. I mean, it runs a gamut of vocations of people, regular middle-class Americans trying to build their own lives. Suddenly, because of laws like that that Kamala Harris supported, would see those opportunities disappear. So those are just two examples of things that I find, and I think we find concerning about Kamala Harris, and if she were president, the types of policies she would push forward on.
Patrice Onwuka with the Independent Women's Forum on Friday morning's Washington Journal on C-SPAN. Join us every morning live at 7 Eastern for another Washington Journal. Even with the 2020 campaign in full swing, some pollsters are already looking to 2024. A Canadian firm surveying Americans for the top choices for Democratic and Republican nominations, neither Joe Biden nor Donald Trump listed as options. And here are the results. On the Democratic side, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo leads with 21%, just ahead of Senator Kamala Harris, who has 19%. Governor Cuomo was on a conference call with reporters today and was asked about it.
The poll was shocking to me, frankly. You know, the other people in the poll all ran for president. I don't know if you've noticed, but I didn't run for president. They were all bona fide presidential contenders. They were the basically the slate that ran this past time. So, It was shocking to me. I think what that is, well, it must be, from the briefings and from what New Yorkers did on COVID. And I applaud New Yorkers. And I think it's reflective of the actions that New Yorkers took. And possibly my rapier wit and just a stunning sense of humor, which I'm sure you would attribute it to, Nick. But I think that's what it is. But it was shocking to me.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on a teleconference. That poll, again, from a Canadian firm, on the Republican side of the 2024 presidential nomination preference, top choice, Senator Mitt Romney with 30%, then Vice President Mike Pence at 18%. By the way, Governor Cuomo focusing today's call on the same subject as he has on most of the news conferences he's held the past couple of months, the coronavirus. He said New York has seen less than 1% of all coronavirus tests return positive for 7 straight days, and he said we have to protect the progress. But he also announced that in New York City, soon, the opening of museums, bowling alleys, and gyms. A long-awaited vote today in the United Nations Security Council on a U.S.-sponsored resolution to indefinitely extend the arms embargo on Iran. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, traveling in Vienna, asked about it during a news conference with the Austrian foreign minister.
Look, we've been at this issue on this U.N. arms embargo for coming on 2 years, since December of 2018 was the first time I spoke publicly about it. It makes no sense to permit the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism to purchase and sell weapon systems. It doesn't make sense for the European people either, in our view. We think anybody that's within missile range will be a greater risk because of the air defense systems, for example, that the Iranians will be able to purchase if this arms embargo expires on October 18th. And so we're urging the whole world to join us, to just make the simple statement, this isn't about the JCPOA. This is about whether the world is going to permit Iran to buy and sell weapon systems. Again, it's that clear. It's that simple. We think the time is not right. We don't think Iran has given any indication that it is in a place remotely where the world should allow Iran and China to sell them high-end weapon systems. And so we're going to do everything that we can within our diplomatic tool set to ensure that that arms embargo doesn't expire, we hope. The voting will be within the next handful of hours. We hope that we'll be successful. When we see the results of that, we'll make the decision about how to move forward. We have been unambiguous, however, about the fact that we have no intention of allowing this arms embargo to expire. None whatsoever.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Austria. Results of the UN Security Council vote expected Friday night. The Iran arms embargo expires October 18th. It was part of the UN resolution that approved the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. President Donald Trump withdrew the U.S. from that deal in 2018. This has been Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to download the free C-SPAN Radio app to take C-SPAN Radio with you everywhere and get our podcasts. Podcasts also available at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good night and weekend, and we'll see you Monday.